Thank you, everybody, so much for being here with us today. We have a fantastic presentation for you today from Tricia Lund. I got to see her speak at a conference that we were both at, and I immediately said to her, you know, this is a great topic and things that are so important for our kids to know about. Please come present on one of our webinars. And she is graciously indulging me. We're going to be learning today about how to teach and support healthy relationship skills and boundary setting with our loved ones. I am Michelle Morris from Consolidated Planning Group, and I have a few things to go through before I turn it over to Tricia, but I'll be quick because I know you're here to see her, not me. A couple of little housekeeping items. Because we are in webinar mode, we can't see you or hear you. But we do see the number of participants, so I know you're out there and I appreciate you being here with us today. If you have any questions or comments, we are happy to answer as many of those as possible, but please go ahead and put them in the chat box. That way I can see them and let Tricia know that she's got a question. Also, today's webinar and all of our webinars, we always record them and then put them on our YouTube channel. Now, later today, whatever email you registered to get into this webinar, we are going to use to email you the slides and a link to that YouTube channel so that you can watch this over again or check out any of our other presentations. We also load these presentations to our podcast. So if you would rather listen than watch a webinar live, you can do it that way as well. At the end of this presentation, there is a link to our webinar. If you might have found us through the webinar and you want a copy of the slides, you can email us contact@cpgcares.net, and we would be happy to send you a copy of the slides. So, Consolidated Planning Group, who are we? We do these webinars a lot, so you might have already seen us before. If so, welcome back. We're glad you're here. If not, if this is your first time with us, just a little bit about us quickly. We are located just outside of Houston, but we serve families all across Texas and all across the United States. We have over 30 years of experience with financial services, investments, life insurance, things like that. We are members of the Million Dollar Round Table, which, you know, is kind of an industry thing that says that a lot of people trust us to work with us. We are also members of the Special Needs Planning Academy, and we are nationally certified Social Security advisors. So we help families understand all of the, you know, nuances around special needs planning, what your protection plan for your family going forward, what happens if the main breadwinner dies too early or lives too long or becomes disabled along the way. We help you with those financial questions. Lifetime care plans, you know, once you are gone, your child is going to need care for the rest of their lives, possibly. So how do we make that happen? We help with transition planning, that magical time when they're 18 and suddenly in the eyes of the law, they're a grown adult, even though in our hearts, they're still our children. How do we deal with those changes? We can help families with their financial and life insurance and investment needs. For example, ABLE accounts, plans for life insurance, term and permanent plans, investments. How are you going to set aside enough money and make enough money to leave for your child? And then, of course, we're here to advocate and educate. You know, the owner of our company of Consolidated Planning Group has two special needs kids. And when she was going through this, she had already been in financial services for a long time. And she was thinking to herself, this is so difficult. And there are so many things you need to know. So she kind of made it our mission as a company to sort through the chaos and put it together in bite-sized chunks for parents like you so that you can learn from us and not have to go through everything by yourself. So, when you think about, do I need to work with a financial advisor who knows about special needs planning? We think obviously that you do, because you could make some mistakes that could cost you more than if you had just gone to an average financial advisor. And out of about 263,000 financial advisors across the United States, fewer than 200 focus on special needs planning. That's less than a tenth of a percent of all the financial advisors in the United States who do what we do. So you are definitely in the right place when you're with us, learning from us, working with us, listening to our webinars. One thing that we know keeps your families awake at night is thinking about who is going to care for my child when I'm no longer here. So just a few high-level tips regarding that. First of all, start planning early. Even if the individual with special needs in your family is a young child, have those conversations now. Think about what's going to happen in the future, or if you were gone tomorrow, who is going to be there to help take care of them? And foster that relationship now so that when the time comes, Auntie Rachel, who you think is just going to take care of your child and your child, maybe you can build that relationship so that if that time ever comes, they'll have a relationship already. It'll be so much easier on your child. And planning ahead gives you the opportunity to make smaller incremental changes bit by bit that make a big impact in the end, so that it doesn't seem like such a burden on your family, whether that's a financial savings plan or a plan of, how are we going to put away money to save for housing for our loved one or an educational program or a vocational option. There's a lot out there. We also want you to think about touring these places early, residential communities or vocational programs, to see what's going to be right for your child. And make careful considerations about setting it up to where, oh, Jacob's big sister Sarah is just going to take care of him when they get older. Well, maybe by that time, Sarah will have her own plans and not really want to take care of Jacob, but she'll feel obligated because you said so. And on the same course of thinking, maybe Jacob, he loves Sarah as a sister, but if she steps into the role of being caregiver, he might start to resent that a little bit. So just be careful when you think, oh, a sibling's just gonna take care of them. So that's all from me. I won't bother you too much until the end. I am going to let Tricia take over. And like I said, I've seen her speak before. She is fantastic. Please reach out to her if you have any questions following this. And Tricia, if you would like to get going, I would love to turn it over to you.
Okay. Yeah, awesome. When I'm going through to move through the slides, do I just click an arrow or do I click the
You can click the arrow or on the
Yeah,
bottom.
I see. Okay.
You see
Yeah.
that? Okay, go ahead. And if it
Okay.
doesn't work, just let me know and I'll do the slides.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm excited to chat with everyone about a topic that is super important to me. I was going back and kind of looking through what I've done with my life, and I actually got really interested in the whole concept of consent and people who have disabilities and are they being allowed to consent? Do they have the skills they need to consent? And what are we doing about abuse when it comes to our neurodivergent population? And I was interested in this years and years ago when I was working in a clinic. And thankfully, I've been able to get the education that I need to give me some more skills to not only teach neurodivergent individuals, but hopefully provide direction to the community and parents about how we can help create and sustain healthy relationships and help our children or those that we work with and take care of to set boundaries, because being able to set a boundary is really, it's what it's going to bring your life meaning, but it's also going to keep you safe. So I don't think that I can click on things if you, yeah,
That's I'll do it.
okay. All right. So this is just a little bit about me. I have a master's degree in special education. I've taught special education for years. I've always done middle school and high school age. And I'm also a board certified behavior analyst. I have done work in clinics. Right now I own my own company and I specifically work with young adults and adults who are in group homes and day helps, and work a lot with them on managing some of their behaviors and training staff on ways to work effectively with them. I'm also a certified sexuality educator, and I use that degree to help me teach about boundaries to a lot of the individuals that I work with. I'm not qualified to give a diagnosis. I can't diagnose autism or anything like that. But I do have knowledge of interventions that can be effective. If you have questions about a specific person, you're more than welcome to contact me and we can schedule a consult. It's usually easier to do that than to talk about it in a place like this, because sometimes there's personal information you don't always want to divulge. And just a couple of things that I've got going. So I've been working on teaching social media safety classes. And this is some information about those. We have 3 different classes going on. We started our first group and it's ending this week, and the next round of classes is going to start in January. We go over a basic introduction to social media, which is going to teach some of our individuals to just identify the concept that people lie and people are not always who they say they are. And just because someone is nice to you does not mean that they're a good person. And then our next class talks about common red flags that you need to be aware of. If you're talking to someone online, things that could pop up that indicate, hey, this person probably isn't safe. We go over various scams, celebrity scams, romance scams. And then in our last one, our social media 201, we talk a lot about, well, what do I do now? Okay, I know that social media can be unsafe, but I still kind of want to be on it because that's where all my friends are. And so we talk about, well, these are some things that you can do to stay safe. Or what do you do if you realize, oh my gosh, I have been scammed and I'm talking to this dangerous person? What do we do now? So if you're interested in those, you're more than welcome to reach out to me and we can talk about how to get your child started in those. Okay, next one. And then this just provides some dates and times. They're going to be starting up in January. They last for 8 weeks. We divide by ability level, and they are all in like the afternoon or like late evening. So, okay.
Next. And these classes are going to be virtual classes. So yes, you can just do it from home. Oh, that's
good. Yeah, they're virtual classes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when you receive these slides later on today, everybody will have the information about this to be able to sign up their kids. That's fantastic.
Awesome. All right. So these are the objectives that we're going to go over today. I want to start with exploring some of the personal anxieties that pop up when we are helping our children to form relationships. Because what I've seen in the work that I do, but I also have a sister who has a disability. And so this comes up for me as well. I have these anxieties. I'm scared about certain things. I really, really want them to be able to have relationships, but I'm also nervous. And so we're going to do some activities to figure that out a little bit and figure out how to help manage some of those difficult feelings. And then we're going to talk about why it's hard for neurodivergent individuals to set boundaries and why it's probably harder for them than it is for people who are neurotypical. And then we're also going to identify some skills that are needed in order to set boundaries. And then I'm going to go over a couple lessons that you can use to specifically teach some of those skills.
Before we go on too far from those classes that you mentioned, what is the age range allowed for those?
So I have 13-year-olds that are going to be joining our next session, and we go all the way up to adulthood. So right now we're trying to divide classes by both ability and age. That can be a little bit tricky. And that's something that we can talk about. If you have a 13-year-old, but they might work well in an advanced class, then we'll talk about what the dynamics of that group would look like and whether or not your child will still be a good fit for it.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so what we're going to start with is a lot of people that have disabilities are really subject to a high degree of intrusion or policing around developing relationships. And when I say policing, what I mean is that they're not just parents, but I see this a lot in the group homes that I go to and the staff that I work with. Who are they alone with? How long are they alone? Oh my gosh, they've been talking to each other for, 45 minutes. We got to see what's going on. There's really not a lot of privacy around relationships and their ability to form a relationship without constant scrutiny from outside sources. And the reason that that happens is primarily because of fear. We do it because we're nervous and we're scared, and we don't want our children to get hurt physically or emotionally. And also there's a lot of rules and regulations, especially when you get into group homes and day habs, about what's allowed and what's not allowed. The thing that can be a little bit, I think, frustrating is that people who are neurotypical have a lot more freedom when it comes to relationships and who they want to have a relationship with versus people who are neurodivergent. And so what I'm interested in is there a way that we can create freedom and independence, but still find a way to keep everyone safe? And so that's going to kind of come with our next activity. If you want to, okay, yeah, go ahead and go to the next one. Okay. So everyone in the animal kingdom is going to move towards things that make them feel safe, and that are important to them. And they're going to move away from things that they don't care about or things that are scary. So if, for instance, if you're a rabbit, you're going to move towards a hutch or a warm place, or you're going to move towards food, or you might move towards your owner, or your owner's voice when you hear them. You're going to move away from dangerous noises, things that you're not sure about, things that could hurt you from the cold, from being lonely. And it's the same thing for us too. If you want to go to the next slide. So we also are going to move towards what's important to us, and we're going to move away from things that are scary. So for instance, ideally in my life, I want to move towards my family, my friends. I love animals. I love learning. Those are all things that I want to move towards because it's important to me. Some things that I want to move away from are people hurting my feelings, feeling inadequate, making mistakes. And so this is where things can get a little bit tricky, is you cannot move towards and away things at the same time. You're either going in this direction or you're going to go in this direction. And I see this a lot with the individual, well, specifically with the parents that I work with, is they really want to move towards their child having a relationship, or their child talking to more people or gaining more independence. But there's also a lot of fear. There's fear that they're going to get hurt. And there's fear that, well, what if my child does find someone and now they're kind of moving further away from me? There's also fear that you're going to be judged as a parent. And so sometimes those fears and those away moves take over, and they stop us from doing what's important. Because we're so scared, because we're so nervous, we're going to focus on moving away from things instead of moving towards what's important. And then sometimes we don't even act. Sometimes we kind of just sit in this little bubble because we're so scared to even do anything. And really what that does is that stops us from leading a life that is full of meaning and full of importance to us. If you want to go through, we could skip this one and that one. Okay, so we're going to do a little exercise. I want you to, if you have a post-it note or a sticky note or something, go ahead and grab it. Or if you have like a little index card, you can just do it in your head. On the first part of, well, actually, let me just go over this first. So things that I care about the most and that are the most meaningful in my life are also the things that come with the most pain. This is a concept I still am trying to work with, I think, myself. And I was talking to a client about this the other day. He said, "Miss Trisha, I really want to be happy." And I said, "That is great. I love that. But are you willing to also experience sad and fear and anxiety? Because they come together. You can't pick one without the other. And so we need to learn to live a life where we are okay having both of those things." So if you want to move to the next slide. All right, so what I want you to do is I want you to think about what sort of person do you want to be for your son or your daughter or your students or those kind of people that you work with. And I'm going to give you a minute to think about it. Okay, just about 10 more seconds. All right, and then I want you to turn the card over. And when you're thinking about the type of person that you want to be for your child or for those that you work with, what are some of the difficult feelings that pop up? Are there fears that pop up? Are there concerns? What are some of those difficult feelings that pop up for you? Okay, so I know this was really quick to go through this because I think it definitely takes a little bit more time, but hopefully when we're done with this, you can take a little bit of time and put some more thought and effort into that. So I'm going to share mine. So the type of person that I want to be for the individuals that I work with, but also for my sisters, I want to be someone who, I get emotional when I talk about these things because I feel very strongly about it. I want to be the type of person that helps them to really care about themselves. I also want to be the type of person that loves them and values them regardless of the mistakes that they might make. I want to be the type of person that teaches independence. And I want to be the type of person that I guess helps them to feel connected. Even if it's not just from me, maybe it's from other people. The difficult feelings that come up for me is I feel scared. I feel scared for the person. I don't want to put them in a situation where they're going to be hurt. And then I'm scared for me because mm-hmm. I don't want to make a mistake and have everyone blame me and say you were horrible at this. And then I also get really nervous that if I teach them to have relationships, is that going to impact my relationship with them?
I think that everybody, as we're going through this, I bet there's a lot of similarities in all of both of these columns for all of the parents on here. We all want to do the very best that we can as parents, and we all have that fear of, you know, not quite making it there, or doing something wrong and screwing something up or whatever. So I feel like we are all, when you do this exercise, I bet we all have very, very similar answers to these questions.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, when it comes to us beating ourselves up, it's this moment of self-compassion that we need to have. It's easy for me to think I'm the only one that feels scared. And I think it can help a little bit if I remember, you know what? I am not the only person that feels scared. There is a collective group of us and we're all feeling scared. And that's okay. That's an okay feeling. It's a hard feeling, but it's an okay feeling. All right, if you want to move on to the next one. So the question that you need to ask yourself is, am I willing to have both sides of this card? Because it's a package deal. If I want to be this kind of person for my child, I'm going to feel these difficult things. And this is something I've also worked with some of my groups on, is learning that these feelings that come up, they are difficult, but they're not the end of the world and they're not going to last forever. And some of them aren't even true. How often do we have a fear and we are convinced it is true? Our mind is always playing little games and little tricks with us. And so I would encourage you that when you think about your child and you think about the things you want them to have, and you think about how hard that is, to sit with that for a second and say, you know what? Yeah, this is hard. And I'm going to sit with that feeling, but I'm not going to let it stop me from doing the things that are important to me, because I can still act and I can still move towards what's important, even though I feel scared. And that feeling's not going to last forever. So I hope that these are some things that you can remember as you move on through your life. It's definitely something I have to constantly remind myself of. But I've also noticed that this is something that it not only helps me, but I've seen these things help my clients when we talk about the negative and difficult feelings that pop up and how to manage them, because those feelings aren't going anywhere. They're going to stay. So let's learn how to have a working relationship with them. And I guarantee that you as individuals are probably doing more good than you think you are.
And
I'm crying. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I am just like you. I'm one of those people who I cry when I'm angry, and I cry when I'm happy, and I cry when I'm frustrated, and I cry when I'm so excited. And that's all right. We're all here to learn and help each other. So no judgment allowed.
Thanks. This is my authentic self. Okay. I'm just giving everyone my authentic self. Okay. So now we're going to jump into boundary setting. So when it comes to boundaries, there are so many, and it's so easy, to say, oh, I'm going to teach boundaries, and then realize, oh my gosh, there is so much involved in this. So these are all the different types of boundaries that can be set: physical, emotional, verbal, time, work, spiritual, financial. There's so much out there. What we're going to be focusing on today is physical boundaries, because I think that seems to be the one where that brings up the most fear, is teaching neurodivergent individuals to advocate for themselves and to find ways to protect themselves. Okay, so you can go to the next slide. Okay, awesome. So these are all the things that are involved in being able to set a boundary. First, you need to be able to know how to give someone permission to do something, and you need to know how to not give them permission to do something. You also need to be able to read someone's body language or verbal words and know when they are giving you permission versus when they're not giving you permission. So four kind of basic things. And then if you want to go to the next slide, what we're going to be focusing on today is the two up at the top. When I work with individuals who have been in dangerous situations or potentially been victimized, that's where the problem is, let me take that back. Part of the problem is them being able to give consent and not give consent. Part of it is humanity and needing to teach people to just be basic good human beings. But I don't have as much control over that as I want to. So that's the part that I'm choosing to focus on. What I do find with some of my individuals who might end up in jail, get into a lot of trouble, it's because they're not always able to read those cues and understand what people are saying. So there really is a lot of room for teaching, but we're going to be focusing on those pink ones for today. We'll just go over this briefly, but what I really want to get across is the concept of setting a boundary involves so many things. And so it really is a difficult skill, which is why we teach early and we start small. So some basic things with setting a boundary is you have to know what you like and you have to know what you don't like. And in some of the groups, so I have a group for individuals that have Down syndrome, and we spend so much time on this, just asking them, okay, well, do you even know what you like or what you don't like? And sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't, because they live in a world where they're expected to be compliant. And so we don't always ask them what their preference is, or maybe they've never been in a situation where they have to figure out what they like or don't like. And then also knowing the words that are going to stop someone from doing something. The other day we were practicing saying no in one of my groups, and it was so interesting. I would practice saying something like, oh, hey, can I give you a hug? Or can I give you this? And all we did was have them practice saying no. And I'm not talking like a meek no, okay? Say no, say it hard, say it fast, say it multiple times if people don't understand that. And with so many of my clients, especially if they've been taught to constantly follow directions and you don't say no to adults, that's a hard skill for them, which is why we have to specifically address it and practice it. And then also knowing body language that indicates, hey, someone is not comfortable with what you're doing, or what body language can I give or show that means I'm not comfortable with what's happening. And this seems to be the biggest one up here, is identifying people that you trust. And not just one person, you need to have multiple people in your sphere that you trust. Because the sad honesty of it is that the majority of sexual abuse is going to happen with people that they already have a relationship with. A stranger going and hurting someone, it happens, but it happens a lot less than someone in a close family member, a close friend, someone that they are in constant interaction with at school. And so they need to have multiple trusted people to go to, just in case the person that they go to initially doesn't believe them, or was the one that was hurting them, or is going to make things a little bit messy. And so in my groups, we also talk about that a lot too. Tell me who these trusted people are. Can you name three? Can you name four? Yeah, so that's a good skill to look at too. Okay, so the reason that we even want to teach boundary setting, and I'm probably preaching to the choir here, is because it's going to provide protection. And it's going to increase the likelihood that they'll be able to have a healthy relationship. It's also going to increase their self-concept. It's going to increase the way that they feel about themselves. If they feel that they have the power to say yes or no, or they have the power to accept a friendship or reject a friendship, that can really, I think, turn them into a really powerful human being who feels like the words that they have meaning. And the reason we also teach these skills is because it's a way for them to self-advocate, which I'm sure many of you know, as we get older, they're going to need those self-advocacy skills. And so if we can start teaching them when they're young, in small instances, it's going to be a lot easier when they get older. Okay. All right. So this is why setting boundaries is going to be specifically difficult for neurodivergent individuals. A lot of them aren't able to identify kind of that gut feeling that means that you're in danger. I was going through some different lessons the other day, and all of them talked about being able to read the gut feeling. So for instance, with social media, a lesson I was reviewing said, you know that you're in a dangerous situation when you've got that gut feeling. Well, that's great. But if you aren't able to read that gut feeling and you don't know what that gut feeling feels like, that means that you're probably going to put yourself in situations that are dangerous. And that goes along with they're not able to recognize when they're comfortable or uncomfortable. They also may not feel like they're entitled to say no, or that they're entitled to express how they feel. And I think that none of us would ever want to treat someone like that, but I think that it happens a lot. I look back to when I was teaching, and it's a total, the idea of you know better and then you do better. But I remember when I was teaching, and I very much taught with this idea of you don't say no to me, I'm the teacher, and really wasn't modeling that concept of, hey, you can say no to me. That's okay. I mean, there are instances where you're going to have to do what I ask you to do for your health and safety, but you are a human and you have the right to say no.
I think that comes out a lot too. As we're growing into adults, we're thinking about all those times when we were kids or when we did this to our kids. Oh, give Auntie Sally a hug. You know, oh, I don't want to. Oh, come on, give Auntie Sally a hug. Even that little thing, I mean, that plays into what you're talking about. They feel like they're not allowed to say no, and they're telling you they don't want to, but you feel obligated, like, oh God, Auntie Sally wants to hug my kid. You feel obligated to let them, and then here you're negating their wishes.
Yeah, that's a big one. And I feel like in general, people are getting a little bit better about that. But yeah, I definitely agree that, you know, these are kind of the ways that I grew up, and now I'm kind of having to unlearn some of it and, you know, hopefully do better. And then also they may not believe that their body is their own. And I see this a lot with individuals who have very severe physical disabilities and they need help from caregivers. There's a lot of touching that goes on. There's a lot of invasion of personal space that goes on. And yes, we're doing it because we're trying to get them dressed or get them changed or get them here or get them there. But that can create kind of this sense of my body isn't mine because people are going to touch it and do things to it, even if I say that I don't want that to happen. That's a whole other topic I can talk about for an hour. So that we're not going to talk about that one. We're going to talk about these first two. Recognizing internal cues. All right. So if you want to move to the next slide. So essentially with recognizing those internal cues, this is what it looks like. Something happens, you don't like it, and you tell someone to stop. Something happens and you notice in your body, oh, hey, I do like it. And then it continues. So for instance, you know, I eat a whole bunch of chocolate and I love the way that it tastes and it's amazing and it's making me so happy. And so I'm going to eat more of that chocolate. Or I am running outside and I realize that it hurts and I don't like it because of all my muscles are hurting. And so I stop. All right, next slide. Okay. So taking this more to like a relationship standpoint, for instance, you might have a friend, someone you consider a friend, and they put their hand on your butt. And if you're not able to realize, hey, I don't feel like that. I don't like where this is going. I didn't like how that feels. You're not going to say anything and you're not going to do anything to make the behavior stop. And so that friend's behavior is going to continue, and not only continue, but it might push you to more intimate behaviors down the line that you're not ready for. And one of the reasons those things is happening is because you didn't really know. You didn't know that you were uncomfortable in that situation. Also, it could be, so if a friend pats you on the butt or grabs your butt and you do feel uncomfortable, then you are able to say, hey, I don't like that. What are you doing? Please stop. Or you're able to move away. And then that behavior stops, and you're also less likely to be in situations that are going to be more dangerous. So that's how that gut feeling kind of correlates with personal safety. Okay. All right. So interoception is one. So we've got all these sensory systems that I'm sure many of you are aware of. We've got the visual system that kind of shows us, hey, this is what you're seeing. We have the auditory system, which processes what information is coming in auditorily. We've got the tactile system, which helps us process the information that we're feeling and touching. So this is a relatively new one, and I think it's amazing. It's called the interoceptive system. And essentially, the interoceptive system is, it's all internal, and it's helping you to read what is going on internally. Am I hungry? Am I full? Am I scared? Do I need to use the bathroom? Do I feel sick? Do I feel happy? Do I feel nervous? All of those things come from internal cues that your body is giving you. And so your body is taking that information, and it's going to help you to make sense of outside experiences. So I think the next slide has got some. Okay. So for instance, when I'm feeling tired, these are some cues that my body is giving me. My eyes are going to get really heavy. They might droop a little bit. My muscles are going to get really lethargic and slow down. And when I notice those things, because my interoceptive system is working, I can say, hey, I am tired. I need to fix this. I need to go to bed. I need to maybe eat something, take a quick nap. Same thing for anxiety. When I feel anxious, the interoceptive system in my body, the heart is racing. I'm noticing that my heart is racing. I'm noticing that maybe I'm shaking a little bit. My chest is feeling really tight. And so because I'm aware of those internal things, I can say to myself, hey, I'm anxious. So maybe I need to get out of this situation, or maybe I need to take some deep breaths and calm myself down if it's not dangerous. Well, if I'm not able to be aware of those things, then I'm not going to be able to set a boundary or engage in things that are going to help me protect myself. So for instance, with the going to bed, if I feel those things, then I know I need to do, you know, A, B, and C. And then the next slide. Then with the anxiety, if I know I'm feeling A, B, and C, then these are things that I can do to help alleviate that feeling. Okay, next slide. So when teaching neurodivergent individuals about this concept, it's really important to let them use their own words to kind of describe it. Well, let me go back really quickly. So the reason that neurodivergent individuals struggle with this concept of interoception is because, as we know, a lot of them struggle with sensory things in general. And so it makes sense that someone who is neurodivergent is also going to struggle reading internal cues. You're also going to see this with individuals that have been through trauma. Oftentimes when someone has been through trauma, they are in an uncomfortable situation and they're not able to get out of it. And so their body is going to do what it needs to keep them safe. And so it will kind of shut down. And so then people who have been through trauma aren't always able to realize when they're back in those traumatic situations. Also, people who are on antipsychotics are also unable to consistently read those internal cues, because a lot of these antipsychotics come with side effects that are, they're going to numb you a little bit. They're going to stop you from being fully aware of what's going on. And I'm not saying that you should take someone off antipsychotics. I'm just saying that if you know that someone is on those and they're neurodivergent, they're going to have a little bit more of a hard time with understanding the cues that their body is telling them. All right, so here's some activities you can do. You can go ahead and skip this one.
Let's skip that. Okay, gotcha.
So when I teach this, the first lesson that I teach with my individuals is all we're going to do is we're going to focus on what you're comfortable or uncomfortable with. And I want you to notice how your body reacts when you're comfortable or uncomfortable. And the rationale that I give my clients is I say, our body is always giving us cues and it's always sending us messages. When we pay attention to those messages, then we can do things to keep our bodies healthy and safe. And then the next slide will go through the activity. So I give them a body and I say, I want you to draw what comfortable looks like for you. And we've got lots of different colors. I want you to tell me what color it is. Is it in a certain part of your body? Is it in your head? Is it in your stomach? Is it a shape? Is it a certain shade of color? And I've seen this with a lot of, especially my autistic clients, do better with this than with having actual words. If I can give them a picture and I say, hey, I want you to draw that feeling for me, then they're really able to do it. And then we can talk more. Oh, hey, I noticed that when you drew comfortable, you feel it really in your chest. That's interesting. Okay, well, tell me a little bit more about that. So the goal here is really to get them exploring what it feels like, but also using terms that are familiar to them. For instance, I have a client who, when I ask him to describe certain feelings, he does it through little video clips. So if I'm forcing him to use the words happy, sad, mad, that doesn't mean anything to him and he gets a little frustrated. But if he can show me a video clip that equals, oh, this is what comfortable looks like to me, then that is, it's affirming to him, but it's also, I think it's helping us understand each other better instead of me pushing my agenda on him. So I would say with both of these exercises, that's why we're not using a lot of words. We're using things that are a little bit more abstract, like colors and shapes. You can even use songs. Like I said, video clips, Disney characters. If you had to have a Disney character that portrayed comfortable or uncomfortable, what would that be? And it's so surprising that people come up with great answers to that. Okay, next one. So you're going to do the same thing for uncomfortable. Okay, next slide. These cards are from, there's a lady named Kelly Mahler, and she has done amazing stuff with teaching interoception skills. And this is a curriculum that I bought from her, but she has these really great visuals. And so with some of my clients, I'll use these visuals to help prompt some language if maybe they're not sure what words they're going to use to describe comfortable versus uncomfortable. And if you want these, you can email me and I'll send you to her website also. Okay, next slide. You can keep going. These are just examples of what the
I will go through these, but it's interesting to think of all the ways that you can feel, you know, do they feel tickly? Do they feel itchy, sweaty, sore, dry? It's just seeing these cards, it gives such a good vocabulary to really get those words out there.
Yeah. And it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning about how they need to encourage them to use their own words. Because when I feel anxious, you know, my heart races, my, you know, muscles clench. But when someone else feels anxious, it might feel and look completely different. And so if I'm telling them anxiety always looks like this and this and this and this, then they may not know when they're feeling anxious and when they're in an unsafe situation. And that's why I love the cards too, because it gives, like you said, more vocabulary for them. Mm-hmm. So this is just kind of a breakdown of how you can teach some of that vocabulary. I like to focus on activities that we're doing in the moment, because it's kind of difficult to reflect back on past experiences and remember all of these details. And so in my group, sometimes we'll do an exercise, or we'll listen to a music, or we'll watch a little clip of a movie, or I'll have them try new foods. And that's how we teach that concept, is in the moment. So at level one, this is for individuals who may not have a lot of language and may not have hardly any understanding of what's going on internally. All I'm going to do is label the behaviors that I notice. I noticed that when you tried that candy, your mouth went like this and it puckered up. And then I noticed that your eyes closed a little bit. That makes me think that maybe you don't like the candy. I don't know. What do you think? Or if I notice someone is getting upset, hey, I noticed that your face is turning really red and I can see that your hands are clenching right now. That makes me think you might feel upset, but what do you think? So all I'm doing is just labeling behaviors so they can start to notice that they need to also be aware of what those behaviors are and what they mean. So then for level two, I'm going to give them some choices. So going back to the client who was upset. So I'm looking at your hands right now. I want you to tell me, are they tight or are they loose? And then the person will tell me if they're tight or they're loose. And then I'm going to say, yes, that's great. Okay. I love that you noticed how they felt. If we're doing an activity and I notice that a client doesn't want to do it, I might say, hey, can you, like, if I see that maybe their pupils are really dilated, hey, can you tell me, how do your eyes feel right now? Do they feel wide or do they feel tight? And so I'm giving them two choices and letting them choose which one best describes their experience. And they might learn as we continue to do this, maybe the word they first used didn't make sense. But as they do it more, I think they're going to find words that match their experience. And then lastly, I'm not going to give choices. I'm just going to ask them, hey, I noticed, well, actually, no, I wouldn't do that. I would just say, hey, how do your hands feel right now? Tell me what they're feeling like. Hey, how does your heart feel right now when we just did that? What do you notice about your heart? And the big thing with all of these activities is we're really teaching clients to just notice. What do you notice? What do you notice about your body that's going on? Because so oftentimes they're not in tune with what's going on internally, which means that they're not aware of when they're comfortable and uncomfortable. Okay. Okay. So then the next lesson is going to be, we're going to make a list of things that make them feel comfortable versus uncomfortable. And the rationale that I give them is, before we can set a boundary, you have to know what you're comfortable and uncomfortable with. So let's talk about it. And then I'll give them the visual that's on the next slide. So I'll give them a circle and I'll have them list down things that they know that they're comfortable with. It's also good to do this maybe after you've done different experiences with them. Maybe after you went to a pep rally, or maybe after you went to a dance, or after you had someone over for dinner. What are some things that you were comfortable with in that experience? And then I would list them. Go ahead to the next slide. Okay, so that's my example. And then the next slide. And then I'm going to ask them, okay, well, now I want you to list things that you're uncomfortable with. What don't you like? And again, like I said before, you can do this really generally, or you can do it after different experiences. All right, we went to the pep rally. I know that you liked looking at the cheerleaders. You liked sitting on the bleachers. You liked sitting next to your friend. You were uncomfortable with the loud noises. You didn't like the drums when they came out. You didn't like the people that were yelling behind you. So you can do this in a lot of different circumstances. And that's really just getting them used to noticing what they're comfortable and uncomfortable with, and also verbalizing it. All right. And then for the next lesson, I talk about have to do's. So we have things that we're comfortable with, and we have things that we're not comfortable with, but we also have things that we have to do. And I bring up medical things a lot with this. I am very uncomfortable around shots. I don't like needles. However, it's a have to do because it is something that is going to keep me healthy and safe. And the reason that I do this is because I do want clients to understand when you're uncomfortable, that could be an indicator that you're in a dangerous situation. But sometimes we're also uncomfortable because something is just scary. And that's where the have to do's come in. I understand that you're uncomfortable, and I want to validate that. And I want to praise you for noticing that you are uncomfortable and scared. But in order to stay safe and healthy, this is something that we have to do. Okay, you can go to the next slide. And these are some, in my virtual groups, this is kind of how we go over that. We talk about how a have to do can be uncomfortable, but we do it because it's going to keep us safe and healthy. And then I also say, if you're confused about the have to do, you can talk to someone you trust. And the reason that I'm doing this part is because I think that it's very beneficial for them to still talk about what's going on. And they might still be confused. Why is it that I have to do this, have to do? And bring in someone you trust. Let's talk about it. Mom, why do I have to get this shot? How long does it last? What is it for? And there I'm really modeling that if someone is being open with you and giving you lots of information, they're most likely a trusted person. If you are asking someone questions and they're saying it doesn't matter, you don't need to worry about it, don't tell anyone that this happened, that person may not be someone that you trust, and you might actually be in a situation that's a little bit dangerous. And so I know that as I'm saying it, it all sounds really complex, but really the breakdown is we're teaching them to notice, we're praising them noticing, we're talking about what's comfortable and uncomfortable, and then we're praising when you talk about that and when you use your voice to say no and to ask questions. Okay. So that was everything. This is my email, my phone number. I have a website, also on Teachers Pay Teachers. I've got a lot of these visuals that are already up there. I've got little social stories that can walk clients through some of these things. Does anyone have any questions?
I did see one question, asking if they could get a certificate after this meeting. And I don't think we've really set it up for any continuing ed certification or anything like that. I mean,
I think we could look into that, but for this one, probably not.
Yeah. I mean, we could verify attendance, but that's about it. That's about it. But we will send you these slides and a recording, the link to the recording of this. So please look out for that. If you have direct questions, like we said in the beginning, maybe you have some questions for Tricia that you don't necessarily want to pose in front of a big group of people, definitely reach out to her. And we appreciate you being here with us today so much, Tricia. Do you treat adults?
Yes, that's my primary population right now is adults. Yep.
Okay. So you said pretty much from age 13 to adult, you can work with anyone.
Yeah. Even now with some school districts, I see kids as young as six. But most of my expertise is going to be with adults and teens.
Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. And everybody's going to get a copy of the slides and stuff with whatever email address you registered with. So I hope you didn't give us a fake email. So like I mentioned at the beginning, we at Consolidated Planning Group are always here to try to help ease your burden and how to make peace out of chaos and let you tune out the things that you don't really need to be worried about and focus on what's the most important steps to take for your future, for yourselves, and for your loved ones with special needs. So our webinars go over a wide variety of topics, you know, education beyond high school or residential options or the benefits, both state and federal benefits that you can sign up, making sure you're getting those benefits and that you don't do anything to jeopardize those benefits. So we can help you understand about different kinds of accounts you can have, how special needs trusts work versus ABLE accounts, how to set up your designations for beneficiaries, your beneficiary designations, just to make sure everything is set up correctly from the beginning so that you don't have a huge headache to deal with later on. So those are the kinds of things that we help families with all the time. This page, this link will take you straight to our events tab on our website so you can see what's coming up. You can register for our webinars there. And even if you aren't able to attend, you will still receive the information. This is our team. We have four financial advisors, and actually we just got a fifth office staff member who help us with all the calls and emails and setting appointments and marketing and making sure we're getting all of our paperwork turned in. All four advisors work with each and every single client. But the cool thing is that because we're a small team, if you call the office, we know who you are. And you don't have to explain your entire situation every time you call the office. Like I said, we're located just outside of Houston, and we've been doing this for over 30 years. Also, what I want to say to you is, especially as you look at the bottom row of smiling faces, we're going to be reaching out to you, of course. You signed up for this webinar. You gave us your phone number and email. We're going to be reaching out to see if you have further questions or if you want a free consultation. So please Don't be rude to us. We're just doing our jobs. If you don't want us to call you at all, you can go ahead and email or call us or use this QR code to set up your own consultation, or just reach out and say you're good, or just wait until we call you and let us know, yes, I want a consultation, or no, I'm good. The free consultation is over Zoom. It usually takes about 30 to 45 minutes. Our first goal is to answer your questions. What do you want to ask us? Here's your chance to pick our brains about financial planning and special needs planning, government benefits, SSI, things like that. After we answer your questions, we get to know you and your family a little bit by asking about your situation. And then we tell you about us and how we work and what we charge. And we decide if it would be a good idea for us to go forward. There is absolutely no obligation. It is totally confidential. And I promise we don't bite. We're really, truly here to help. It's in our hearts. And I hope you can see that through all of the webinars that we do. Anyway, I'll get off of that sales pitch. And I'm going to say also, here are the links for all of our social media, the YouTube channel where we keep all of our webinars, our Instagram page, our podcast, and our Facebook page. So please follow us on those social media things. Reach out if you have any questions for us, or reach out to Tricia. And if you reach us and you meant to go call Tricia, we're happy to get you her information if you don't have it. Okay. So again, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Tricia, so much for agreeing to talk with us today and give us all of these great tips. Thank you, everybody who watched and joined in. And I hope you all have a very fantastic week. If I don't get a chance to see you before then, happy Thanksgiving to you and your families. Have a great day. Bye-bye, everybody.